Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Underserved, the podcast for the rest of the tech industry. I'm your host, Andrew Jelina. This week, we are fortunate to be joined by Mark Carberry, who I've known and been friends with, gosh, over 20 years in the industry.
Oh my God. You know, Andrew, one of us is getting old. I hope it's not me.
Well, getting old stinks, but it beats the alternative.
There you go.
So, Mark, if you could, give me kind of a brief history. You know, I've seen you've had roles from managing teams, VP, CTO, CIO. Tell me a bit about the ride.
It's been a long, crazy trip. And let me first start by saying something to be said for experience. Like I say, between Andrew and I, we've done a lot of different things, had some great experiences, and made a lot of mistakes along the way. And hopefully we can share some things that'll help you folks out in what you're trying to accomplish. There's no better lesson in life than sometimes, you know, learning things the hard way. Started my career many, many years ago. Fortunate enough, right out of college, to land a job as a systems analyst and just fell in love with it. I went into an engineering school in one of the very first things that we were told was you have to have a computer science background. We don't offer a curriculum, but coming out of a good engineering school, I said, this is your basic tool set. And one of the things that I constantly, you know, tell folks on teams is there's a basic tool set that I'm going to advocate and help you folks get. And that changes over the years, you know, year by year. We do a lot of work right now with analytics and tell folks on my teams that if you don't have that sort of background then and the ability to present data, then it's a real drawback in your career. Have varying roles. I started off as a systems analyst, immediately a year later became a software engineer. I went through a lot of different types of industries over the years. Andrew and I actually met up at EDS years ago in communications division. Back then, we were rolling out across the world the B-band. It was just before everything became digital. It was a really, really, really exciting time. Most of my career has been in communications and high-volume transaction processing, which is a great way to learn, too, because if you're in a field where whatever you're doing requires a tremendous amount of fault tolerance and, you know, a high availability and massive loads, you get an education that you don't get in a lot of other industries. So it was a great place to learn. Over the years, became ended up at the VP level. I'm sure Andrew will tell some funny stories. And one of the startups we went together, you know, and I had to learn, make that transition over the years from being an engineer to actually a business leader and having a strong business acumen, as you know, as well as then learning, you know, later in life that you constantly have to keep current on what the enabling technologies are and what's going on in the market. A little bit the further up you get the pyramid, the more you have to look in all directions. Great experience and had a wonderful run along the years, and still out there, very active. The company I was with was fortunate enough to become the CIO 100 award winner 5 out of 6 years in a row. So we did some interesting things. Still have millions and millions of vehicles out there in the telematics market. So I went from communications into automotive and then into high volume video processing. Over the years, I became really interested, I should say, fascinated by security because it was a weakness in all of our teams. I think it's true in a lot of companies as the market grew and became a CSIO as well as a VP C-level IT executive.
I'll go back and tell a quick story about when we really met. So when I was at EDS, Mark was my boss's boss's boss. Didn't really see him much there, but EDS had a reimbursement program where you could take up to 2 classes per semester. So I took a couple classes on like C++ and programming. But I also wanted to take this class on object-oriented analysis and design. And it was at Northeastern, and I noticed that Mark was actually the instructor for this class. So I showed up on the first day of class, introduced myself, said hello, said, hey, Anna's my manager, blah, blah, blah. And I'm interested in taking your class, but I'm kind of all out of money because EDS had maxed out on my reimbursement. So is there any way that I could just audit your class? I'll do all the work. I'll do everything that I'm supposed to from an assignment perspective. You can't officially give me a grade. I get it. But, you know, I just want to learn. I just want to learn this object-oriented analysis and design stuff because that seems cool, much cooler than the basic and C that I'm writing to talk to switches at EDS. And so luckily for me, Mark agreed. Got to know each other over the course of that fall. And during that, he made an introduction for me that was definitely life-changing in Al Sanclemente, who had started a small consulting company, who I started part-timing for, working, writing test drivers at night. So I'd drive from EDS and then go up to Lowell and write test drivers for C++ software. And after a while, thought that was really cool and transitioned to being full-time consultant February 17th, 1997. Actually, it was my first full-time day consulting for WebTech. And we were doing a bunch of work for Mark at the client that we had at the time. And that ended up being an awesome experience. So that company was called Web Technology Partners. Way back then, and then all throughout your career, I've noticed that you've used consultants at many of the places you've been. What's your kind of motivation for using them? What makes sense there for you?
Great question. And actually, throughout the years, I've developed a multi-tier staffing model, but found that consultants have provided a tremendous value. And wherever you go, it's all about time to value and how quickly can you get something out there or fix a problem. What I found is that when you deal with the right type of consulting firm, you can provide a niche expertise that can get you where you want to go a lot faster, augment your teams, train your teams, provide you a peace of mind. A lot of the work that we did over the years was things that just hadn't been done before. And I got to go back for a second and talk about that first experience when I met Andrew. One of the reasons I started teaching, well, the honest to God reason was I just got married and, we were like everybody else when you first start out. You're trying to build up a nest egg so you can go off and, buy a house or just get going. And that's what we're doing. And fell in love with teaching in the evenings because it was a chance to understand a lot of different problems and learn to think differently about how you solve a problem. I worked with a lot of different companies in the state-of-the-art program. They all had very, very different problems, some from very intricate communications architectures to a consumer product in one case, but met a lot of great folks. But again, it brought me back to the whole concept of why do you pick the right type of firm? Syrinx. I've known these folks forever, and I'll tell you in a second about some of the places where they've really, really helped us out, is that when you find the right talent pool and people that are strictly focused on being an engineering company and providing depth in certain fields, it's a tremendous boost to what you're trying to do. Everybody nowadays talks about off-the-shelf software, and there's a lot of hype out there about different tools and efficiencies. But again, smart money is just don't go it alone. Work with somebody and get you where you want to go as fast as you can and take a lot of risk out of where you're trying to get to.
Yeah, and I think you'd also mentioned that some of the companies where you worked, they wanted to keep 10% or X percent of the development workforce contingent. So if there was a downturn, that you could remove the consultants and still keep your full-timers kind of intact and keep the team rolling forward. Have you seen that a lot of places, or do not a lot of folks kind of think that way?
A smart company will step back and say, well, let's look at our staffing model and everything from, how do we, on the internal side, how do we retain people? How do we grow our internal folks to, on the far end of the spectrum, how do we use third-party resources offshore? Even, things, for example, again, going on a limb here on around, crowdsourcing, where does that work? And there's a whole set of options on, how you fulfill your resource requirements. And, now there's a huge rush to people doing managed services, which has its own set of issues around it too. Now you have someone who you hope is a trusted partner, but they're at arm's length. So they can, that can come back and cause issues as well. We started the question, and I started to crest around the ebb and flow. The ebb and flow is natural. It can come as simply as company changing direction, paradigm shifts, competitive challenges, legal challenges around anything that's around compliance, where all of a sudden you just get hit with a different set of issues. Nothing makes you move faster than a breach, for example, or the potential for losing a customer or the potential for not getting a customer for a specific issue. And again, that's why you want to leverage people that aren't going to learn on your dime. And again, you have that guarantee that, you're going to get good, high quality work and get it done in a very predictable way, which is, not seldom the case. Just digress for one second. I've done worked in organizations. I've had as many as 500 people working for me. Remember the last major company I worked for as a CIO, we averaged 60 projects a year over a 10-year period, significant projects, things that were, all in excess of, 1 month duration. And a lot of people talk about project management and the PMO body of expertise. But when you come right down to it, it's about managing change and, managing the exceptions. It's relatively straightforward to build out a plan, although, they all have their risks and issues, but it's how you manage change. And that's where a niche engineering firm can provide tremendous value because they've been there, seen that, done that, as the insurance commercial says, we know a thing or two.
The tough part can be when you're in that seat, when you're a CIO, CTO, that the word gets out that you use consultants and then your phone is just absolutely ringing off the hook. What's that like when you're just getting prospected nonstop?
If you look me up on LinkedIn, I've got a long history. And as soon as you're in any domain, I came last role, I was a CSIO and again, a VP global technology and for video processing company. And I tell you that anybody in that profession that was selling anything from whether it be agile tools to a contact center will find you and call you. And it's a bad model because I can look at my phone and, if it was my wife or daughter, I'd pick up. If it wasn't, I let it go to voicemail. And it's everybody now. And I know that's horrible. And, I get the never ending emails. And you have to actually listen to the voicemail, sift through. There were, I'm not going to promote any products this morning, but I can tell you there were some vendors that came in, partners that became partners that had tremendous value. And you have to know when, there's at least something here. And I usually start by saying to folks, listen, I know you're making 100 of these calls today. And I got to tell you, give me 2 minutes on what you folks do. And I'm going to be totally honest with you. If it's something that is on our forward radar that, we're considering. And I think the politeness and the brevity goes a long way with these folks. And I'll often say, people, we had a major training vendor, which is a good national product and could add value to us, but we just weren't ready for it. And I told those folks, please come back in 3 months and, be annoying. And they did, and in a positive business way. And, we ended up working with those folks. But you do get inundated. I wish there was a way out there I could tell these folks that there's a better way to do the robocalling than to get in road. So the other thing that I found very, very useful, and if you folks, it's hard. If you get a chance to go out to some of these non-pushy mini conferences where you can go out to an evening for, quick dinner and then, an hour conversation in your home that has on a topic, and they'll have a lot of people there from different companies. Or actually, it's important to get out to some of the seminars and conferences. It was nice. I just went to the last Scare World in Boston, which is the conference presentations were pretty bland this year. Everybody's a lot of preaching the same types of things that you hear, around get going on it now or you're going to be in trouble type philosophy. But actually, just being able to walk around and talk to all the different partners and a lot of tool providers, there are less in terms of integration partners or, the niche engineering firms. And that's some place where someone like Syrinx, a niche company like this, can really, really help out because you can say, I'm trying to work my way through a security assessment right now. I've got a particular area that we're really weak on. And can you give me, your current thinking? I'm going to work with you for a little while and, come up with understanding the entire domain. And then based upon our company, make us some good recommendations on where you think we should go. We may or may not do that. But now I have an independent third party coming in of people that are really, deeply educated in this area that can look at your particular problem and not be mired in the day-to-day. I'm often amazed at how people and companies will make assumptions and have a thought process just based upon what they're going through every single day and the current priorities, in front of them. So if you take this third party, they can be very quickly on giving you a good landscape and, they'll advocate on how they can help you beyond that. But then again, they don't have to either. Some of the best work that I've gotten recently and why I advocate frameworks is on getting a partner to come in, assess your posture, and then you can decide, what do I want to do with that?
Of the folks that did kind of get your attention, how did they get above the din? Did they leave a voicemail that had kind of a moment of incongruity, something that you didn't just hit delete, or did they send you an interesting email, or did they meet you at an in-person?
A couple of things really hit home for me. First of all, it's around doing your homework. The people that were really struck me were saying very quickly, they'd say, we do this. We think you folks do this and would need that. But it was a very brief, we've done our homework. It's not a cold call. We do this and here's how it adds value. Give us a few minutes on the phone. And that really hit home. A lot of companies, and it's just bad, will hire, on the lower end of the staffing scale and just say, go work the phones. And it's almost like, I hate to use the analogy, but, cold calling for stocks, and it's...
Boiler room-ish.
That movie still gives me the creeps, but it's a little like that versus someone's a little bit educated saying, you really should consider this. Why? One of the more interesting ones, and again, I'm not going to name companies or products, but I had a company that said, your competitor in Boston uses us. And without, revealing anything competitive, I'm just going to tell you, here's why. And you should be considering this. And it was an eye-opener for me. You might think we do X, but we really don't. And come talk to us. Again, I'm going to come back full circle to sometimes it's better to use that independent third party to try to vet these things for you. And even if it means, a lunch or having, a very, informal executive level introduction around this is what we're really seeing going on out in the industry right now that you should seriously consider.
We touched on it a bit in the beginning, but you said that you've been working more with the security end of things, CISO type work and ISO 27001. Tell me a bit about what you've been up to there and why you're drawn to it.
Yeah, if there's anything that I want to hit home. I'm going to give you some insight that was kind of a game changer for me on security. And I became impassioned on security. We built an architecture, and I want to talk about that for a second, back when in my Jero days where we built a telematics architecture. It was over a multi-year period. We looked at a number of different industries, found one that was novel, that fit in some technology, did something that really scaled, and it's in millions and millions of vehicles. I'd say very, very proud of it. And we went through a process when the company was sold, and there were exactly 12 major Fortune 1000 suitors that came in, and we went through a process finally and came down to a couple that were, in a bidding process. But went through a process called interrogatories, where they fill rooms with people. They'd say, here's the topic, and you could spend 4 to 8 hours on a topic. And so I had 7 interrogatories, which I can tell you, if you've ever gone through this, it's the worst experience of your life, because anyone can ask you anything. And at a moment's notice, your career can end, because if for some reason you're trying to sell a division of a company, and if it falls apart because of you, you don't want to be that guy that was piloting the plane.
Underserved is fortunate to be sponsored by Syrinx, the developer-founded, developer-run software consulting company. Syrinx provides bolt-on software development capacity to accelerate your software projects. Syrinx works with your team and your methodology, on-site or off-site, to deliver on time and on budget. They work in any technology stack: React, Angular, Java, .NET, Python, front-end, back-end, NoSQL, MySQL, any SQL you can come up with, they have experts. You need architects, developers, QA folks, project managers, analysts, data scientists, Syrinx can help everywhere in the software development lifecycle, anywhere in the United States. Syrinx also does complete outsourced software project development if you need a turnkey end-to-end solution, or if you just need an individual resource to fill a development gap. With 100% of their resources onshore and a 20-year track record of success, you can trust Syrinx to get it right the first time. You can reach them today at Syrinx.com or 888-579-7469. That is 888-5-Syrinx. Expand your software development bandwidth at Syrinx.com.
I had some challenging, meetings, and it was a rough time for about 6 months, during the end of that process. But we had a great architecture, a great product, and it went very well. But so I went through these interrogatories, and they can be on anything from, we want to talk about your architecture and how it scales and the economics behind it. Great. We want to talk about your HR model. Remember some of these, and that's where I went into depth around a 5-tier staffing model. Talk about your development methodology. You want to talk about your total infrastructure, enterprise infrastructure. They pick the topics, you go through them. And there's one topic that I thought we'd breeze through, and it was security. And I'll share this with you because it was the point, this is 2015, where my eyes opened. We thought we were a great team and wonderful people, great experience using, third-party help. We thought we were the smartest people in the world. And so we went into a focused 4-hour discussion on security with a CISO from Sirius XM Satellite Radio. And it was a really rough meeting. We thought we just had everything covered, built a phenomenal product, everything. We were going well. By the time I left, we were up to 11 brands on this product, and we got our lunch eaten because we didn't know anything about security. And what I found out at the time was it was such an eye-opener for me that most companies didn't. That was about when the industry was about to get hit with a hammer. So why should you care about this, and where is it going to really hurt you? Everybody, every day, hears the stories about breaches and impact of those. And there's it's going to happen. And when that does happen, you just need to know what to do, whether it be insurance or an incident management team, but it's going to happen. And that's where the focus tends to be on. I'm going to tell you that there's another area. So, things you may be concerned about in your business, you may be concerned about all the stuff you have to do around compliance, whether it be an end of the year, a SOX audit, or if you're privately held, even what you have to do for your, for your taxes, et cetera, for accounting practices. But so there's a lot of work that people have to do around compliance, and it's serious. Larger companies do this easier because they have the breadth of the organizations. There's also a set of work that you have to do nowadays. Everybody knows about around just basic enterprise security, your product security, your security in your customer environment, all that serious and everything else. But it's now a third body of work that people aren't really talking much about that is the one that's going to kill you the fastest right now. And everybody has to worry about a breach, that's true. But this third category, it absolutely amazed me. It's another one of these eye-openers I had in life about a year ago because I started fielding a lot of audits. It's around the ability to not be able to sell your product or service because you can't pass a basic threshold with a purchasing department or to someone either in a legal department or purchasing department or actually the engineering department with whomever you're going to sell to nowadays. They're going to have access to some basic requirements. Now, let me talk to you when you say, I don't know what you're talking about. Let me just say that it absolutely amazes me that as a company, you can protect yourself legally, make sure that you are GDPR compliant. You can make sure that you're following a framework. You can make sure your enterprise is secure, that you know your IT controls are SOX compliant. You can do all those things. Then one fine day, you're going to have a customer of your dreams come in. They might be a mid-sized company, and you've sold them, and you're in a contracting process, and all of a sudden they're going to hand you a document, and that document's going to be a security assessment, a self-assessment. And if you fail that document, if it's not 100%, they're going to have someone come in and audit. That audit may be a third-party team. If this hasn't happened to you yet, I can tell you it's going to, because the whole world woke up on security, and now that's not just an issue for companies looking in. It's an issue for companies looking out. And this is the word I'm going to use, and I hate the word. It's around hygiene. Sometimes you can have the best engineered product in the world, which I think the company I just came out of had a phenomenal product, and they had to. We're doing video processing. And when was the last time you heard about an issue with, you know, video assets being stolen or misused? It's very, very, very rare. You know, you're used to when you sit down in front of your whatever, you know, streaming source that you use, that things just work. Those are very mature products. They're very technically complex. They work very, very well. And they take security very seriously. And all of a sudden, your situation I was, where I'm working for a company that said, that's all great. You make a great product. You got a great price. We like where you're on the market. Your roadmap looks great, but we don't want to do business with you because you have a hygiene issue. And what a horrible word. And what that means is, you know, we're going to look at your enterprise. We're going to assess you via these very simple tools that everybody has. And if you don't pass, you're not going to get past the purchasing gate or the legal gate. Let me tell you a little bit more about that. And it's an area where, again, where an independent consultant can help you, you know, get value here very, very quickly and get past these. It's an organization called Standard Assessments that sprung up. I don't know how long they've been around, maybe 4 or 5 years. And they're just a consortium that builds standard assessment forms for various things, one of which is security. Now, this is about a 2,000 questionnaire that you have to get past. And it's been built by a consortium of people. It's not overkill. It's not Fortune 1000, but a lot of people are using these called public domain assessments right now because they need security, and they need security. They need to know if I can be secure, I'll deal with that, but I need to know that my partners have the right hygiene and they're secure also. Otherwise, given everything going on in the world today, I don't want to do business with them. It's too much of a risk because I don't want to be that guy that has the security problem, whatever that problem is. You know what? The interesting thing is you can ask you folks in your thinking out there if you've heard about a particular security breach. And if you actually research most of the breaches that have occurred, say, in the last 5 years, I find a good percentage, maybe half of them, occurred because of issues that weren't directly related to that enterprise. They were a partner or a piece of technology they were using. Again, how often do you hear about that? You never do. You can name household names of people that had a problem, and it's tagged with them. It's their problem.
It definitely splatters. And like you said, it used to be nobody ever got fired for choosing IBM. Now it's, I don't want to get fired for choosing someone that hasn't passed this security questionnaire, so everyone must pass it.
Absolutely. And by the way, I hate to use this analogy too, but having grown up, you know, on the coast, you know, we were all enamored as kids when the movie Jaws came out. You yell shark, it gets people's attention. And, you know, I'd say if you were at a beach and you yell barracuda, it doesn't get people's attention. But, you know, in the same analogy holds true for security. It's got people's attention right now for all the right reasons.
Let me give you a hypothetical. Someone's a VP of development, their boss leaves, they're getting promoted, they've suddenly become CTO or CIO. If you can go and give them some pieces of advice, like now in this new role, what would the one or two pieces of advice you'd want to give them and help them in their new journey?
First thing is, and this sounds a little crazy, is stop, step back, everything's new, reevaluate. All too often, there are massive norms that are established in companies. You reevaluate your projects, your technologies, everything. And again, I come to second advice with everything in life is don't go it alone. There's a lot of smart people out there, a lot of good firms that can provide you very, very brief, very, very cost-effective, very knowledgeable help. And if you're struggling in a particular area, again, can do the same thing, provide you with a niche help. It's all about time to value. You know, what industry you're in, you're going to have problems. And there's always going to be that 5% of the projects that are just going to make you crazy. But what you have to remember also, too, is that those are major distractors from where you're trying to go as a business. They'll absorb your leadership time. We should be spending time, you know, forward thinking. I like to say that, when I have VPs at work for me, I'd say at a minimum, half your time has to be strategic. And probably the biggest challenge I've had in growing people over the years is the ability to create an executive strategy. And produce a deck. I hate to say it's about PowerPoints, but it's about PowerPoints and something that's extremely clear. I've done a number of these things over the years and just share, you know, not to give some crazy examples. I came, when I first went to this company, I just, in the video processing market, they were not referenceable. They were on fire in their technical support organization across the world. Came in 3 weeks after starting the effort with a deck and a PowerPoint around, you know, here's how we're going to fix this from people, process, and technology. But it was having that ability to actually stop, reevaluate the entire situation, make a number of recommendations, and show a very short-term roadmap, which, you know, thank God actually, you know, worked. Our biggest and most unreferenceable customer became our best and most referenceable customer after that process. But made some hard choices. The there was a particular Asian site that we owned in this as one of our sites for engineering and support that made an immediate recommendation that we had to move out of, and for a number of reasons. And it, what I found, you know, doing independent thinking and actually, you know, canvassing, you know, friends and family, and had a major problem that wasn't going to get better. And the solution was something that was somewhat foreign. But go back to my first point, which was stop, rethink, look around, rebuild the plan. Point number two is don't go it alone. You can get the expertise you need, you know, to solve a problem. There is such a thing as an engineering culture, and it's really important that you know, what I would say is there's some things about it. First of all, is there's the natural quirkiness, and those practical jokes, and unless they get out of hand, and you know, you have to sometimes draw a line. I remember somebody once super glued my coffee cup to my desk, and that was, I just said, you know, the bubble pack, you know, those little foam pellets, when they filled my desk with that to be funny, that was okay. But, you know, you got to draw a line in places too. And it's all good natured fun, and it actually energizes people, and it's all good. And you have to know, you know, do the right things to build a culture. It's not all, you know, strict discipline and, you know, by the book. So that was just my funny anecdote. Was we bought a division of a company down in Texas. It was, I inherited a couple hundred person team developing this real-time telematics product. And the president of the company stayed on. He was there for a short period of time, but he never quite got over the fact that the company was bought, and he loved to give me a hard time about everything. And I remember as I was interviewing, working with the team, there was this one senior engineer. He was on the sustaining side of the product that he became somewhat famous because there wasn't a cafeteria in the building in the park, but this guy had actually outfitted an entire cubicle with every type of coffee you can imagine. And he had multiple Keurig machines, and he had quite a slate. This guy knew coffee. And when the current president of the time found out and found out he worked for me, he just wanted to really, really give me a hard time about this and get coffee out of the building. And my only comeback was, have you had a cup of that coffee? You know, and I just said, and this guy was actually charging people for the, you know, premium rate for the coffee, but he had quite a business. I actually discovered this by seeing a line in the middle of the building one morning. But it's one of those things where, hey, you know, it's getting work done. It's all good. And quite frankly, the coffee was good. So you just leave it alone.
Well, and little perks like that, like you may not see the other upside to it. Like they're not leaving to go to Dunk's.
Oh, absolutely.
They're not going off campus to go to Starbucks.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're going there, supporting a coworker, getting something they like. There's kind of a, you know, camaraderie and hanging out in line, and maybe, you know, you kibitz or meet someone from elsewhere in the company that you might not know. I remember at Monster, they had the Monster Den. Monster was one of the first companies I'd ever seen. I mean, this is back in like 2000, 2001, maybe, where they had the fully stocked food bar in the morning. There was cereal and bagels at lunch. They'd put out cookies. There was soft drinks and fountain soda and everything. And they also had some games around there. And it became a place to kind of meet up and run into people. And I met people from other parts of the company just because we happened to be in the Monster Den at the same time. And, you know, maybe we go do a little stress relief playing ping pong or something. And it was one of the great parts of that facility and that company. And I remember when, I think it was like 02 or 03, the economy's turning down, and they made the announcement at an all-hands meeting that, hey, we're going to have to shut down the Monster Den. It costs like, I don't know, 10 grand a month or something to like keep everything in there. And I was like, wait, no, find someone who's not doing their job and get rid of them, but keep this so that everyone else can be happy, because it was such a source of joy there. What have you seen, any kind of good cultural things at the companies you've been at that you thought were a good idea and that other folks might want to emulate?
And I hate to keep coming back to the food, but it's all about the food. You know, we had a cafe in my former organization, and they brought in healthy food. One of the things that I think was really great the company did was they really tried to emphasize they're not going to bring in wellness programs or those types of things. They're available, but Instead, what they did was they made sure there was a plentiful supply of, you know, fruits, cereals, yogurts, things that were free and, you know, good coffees. Having a cafe environment where people can just go and hang out and get something, it's huge. It may seem like fluff, but the money you spend, you do keep people inside. That's not as important as, you know, the interaction that occurs. And, you know, you're probably helping somebody out too, getting something better to eat than they, you know, get through a drive-through window. And I've seen everything from, you know, from the barbecues to the company events, anything else. But I think nothing gives you more mileage than those areas where people can go just coalesce and you know, have non-scheduled. And then it's not, you know, conference, someplace you can go eat something, get something to eat someplace with a nice inviting environment. You can just sit on and talk.
Yeah. And so I've done a little micro scale thing here at Syrinx. When the folks in the office are kind of hitting their goals, I bring in barbecue and, you know, yeah, I could pick up takeout or whatever, but I actually went through the trouble of flying down to Georgia, learning from a pit master, getting the gear up here, getting really good at it. And so I can make, we've actually competed. We have a barbecue team called Tasty Bites Barbecue, and we won the Mohegan Sun Rib Challenge 3 years in a row. We got very good at ribs, pulled pork, brisket, chicken. And so when the guys hit their goals here, they know that I'm going to be bringing in some barbecue. In fact, on this Monday, they're going to have some burnt ends. So
that's cool. That's really good and great food too. My only anecdote on that, I'll share with you. Years back, we did a chili contest in one of the organizations I worked in. And this one gentleman was a lifelong friend. He said, no one can beat my chili in terms of how hot it's going to be. And I didn't believe him, but I can swear. And this is Prabhu Sekhar. We both somebody that we both know and give him a little bit of airplay there. Very, very talented engineer, real character. We had a chili contest, about a dozen people got involved in it, and I can swear to God that my toenails almost fell off after eating that chili. So, life lesson, never challenge someone to, you can't make your food hotter than mine.
So any other instructive words, parting thoughts?
Yep. If you've hung on this long, let me try to wrap it up and give you some thoughts. I can't tell you how important it is not to go it alone. With that, not going it alone is, you know, having lunch with someone at your level or a peer group at your level or getting some, you know, interim help. That, you know, very strong niche. One of the things that we did when we were building out telematics architecture, we said, stop. We had two customers at the time, one of which was going into receivership. We were failing. We had an architecture in play that I just didn't believe it was me too. Started doing a tour and we looked around at the gaming industry for, you know, an architectural type. Looked around at the travel industry, looked at large scale reservation systems. We had to build this real time architecture that was very, very flexible. You know, the formats that delivered things in around the inputs and being able to find new data sources. So literally did a tour, all different industries, and be amazed how, you know, we had a company down in Providence, which is the U.S. leader in building these lottery machines. They invited us in, we sat and talked to them, and not least but competitive, and said, we're trying to solve this problem. Could you have a conversation about architecture and technology? So anyway, I'm not going to labor it, but just saying, every time in my life I've had to do something very challenging and big, you know, like this, I've gone off and gotten help. And the same thing's true with security too right now. Having an independent third party come in and look at where you are, it's not a lot of cost. It's just a huge benefit because someone that's not mired in your day-to-day can understand what's going on in your organization and give you some good recommendations based on what's going on, you know, in the industry in terms of, you know, process, what are the companies doing in tools. If I just say one thing, I say, don't go it alone. I mean, over the years, I think consultants have become reborn in terms of an industry. At first, it was just considered staff augmentation, which is a word like I use the word hygiene that I hate because it's far more. If you got a company that does staff augmentation, then you're wasting your time. If you're a company like Syrinx, it's able to provide deep, deep engineering talent, sign up as a partner with you around solving a problem, then you're dealing with the right type of firm. And they're few and far between. So I'll leave you in thought and just say, Andrew, provide contact information. I'd love to, anyone like to step outside of this forum and have just a conversation? Either one is happy to do that.
Excellent. Yes, you can get a hold of us at underserved@syrinx.com, or you can tweet at me on Twitter @AndrewJelina. Happy to put you in touch with Mark. Actually, I'll put Mark's LinkedIn profile in our show notes as well, so you can reach out and connect with him there. Mark, thank you very much for joining us today.
Andrew.
Instructive as always. I appreciate it. And we look forward to talking to everyone next time on Underserved.